Let's talk about Liège, Bastogne-Liège. Let's cue that intro.
The big question is this: how do we use cycling as a tool to improve our health, our happiness, and our longevity? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Anthony Walsh, and welcome to the Roadman Podcast.
Roadman, welcome back to another Roadman Cycling Podcast. It's been a minute. I had a super crazy busy week last week and didn't get the podcast out as anticipated. I'm working super hard at the moment. Anyone that's been following along on any of our plans, we've had our 14-day quick start challenge, which obviously lasted 14 days, hence the name. Then we moved on to our 8-week challenge, and we're calling this whole thing the Roadman Journey. But the next step on the Roadman Journey is something that I'm working on at the moment. I'm working super hard on it. It's called the Roadman Blueprint, and it's going to be a 4-month training plan where I'm trying to incorporate training plans, strength conditioning plans, stretching plans, hydration guides, basically everything you need to succeed no matter what your cycling goal. But it's a huge members area and it's a huge undertaking, and I'm launching it with a webinar, and early May is kind of the deadline for it. But we're working full gas on it last week trying to get some stuff across the line for some interim deadlines. So unfortunately, didn't have the time to get the podcast out as anticipated, but it was a super week of cycling, which culminated in Liège, and that's what I want to talk about today. But before I dive into that, let me remind you, because I haven't done so in a week, about Patreon. Over on patreon.com/Anthony_Walsh, the link is in the bio. That's where guys and girls continue to support the podcast. They make this podcast possible every single episode that goes out. So big shout out to everyone that subscribed so far and bought me a pint of beer over there. And if you haven't, please, I'd encourage you to head on over there, because it is hard for all small businesses. Definitely, we're no exception. But thanks to your continued support, we're able to keep getting this podcast out. Right, guys, before I jump into Liège, just, I suppose, one newsworthy story that we all seen coming. Tom Dumoulin, who was named as one of three leaders for Lotto with Roglic and Stephen Kruijswijk at the start of the year, he subsequently announced his sort of impermanent retirement from the sport, walked away for a little bit. I think it was the day or 2 days after he was named as team leader for the Tour. He hasn't been back on the bike since. There's reports that he's back training, but he definitely hasn't been back racing. So it's no surprise that Lotto today have announced that he won't be riding Tour de France. So unfortunately for big Tommy D fans, we won't see him in this year's Tour. I know he's battling with some demons and he's questioning his love for the sport. So hopefully he gets all that sorted out, gets his head straight. And regardless of whether he gets back to the sport or whether he decides to do a Marcel Kittel and just pursue what makes him happy, wish Tom speedy recovery. He's a guy I'd love to get on the podcast someday because he just seems like such a dude. So I want to talk about five things that we learned from Liège. Well, I suppose number one, and we've seen it from the Ardennes Classics, is the GC guys can ride the Ardennes Classics. And this is maybe no secret to somebody who watches these classics year after year, but when we use the term classics, we broadly refer to the Belgian flatter style classics and the Ardennes Classics, but they're not the same thing. They're two very different types of riders. We see our Sagans, our Greg Van Avermaets, our Sepp Van Marcks really excelling in the Flandrian Classics, but then when we move to the Ardennes, typically punchier type climbs, we're seeing more of the GC guys. We're seeing our Carapazes, our Roglic, our Pogacar, Mike Woods, Alaphilippe, these type guys are really up there at the finish of these races. And yesterday we had our Tour de France champion Tadej Pogacar winning Liège-Bastogne-Liège, which just goes to show what a brilliant all-round rider and crazy mercurial talent that we have in our sport at the moment. He's the Tour de France champion, I think the second youngest ever Tour de France champion, and then to add a one-day classic of this note to the palmarès was unbelievable. So chapeau to Tadej Pogacar. Finally learned how to pronounce his name as well, which is nice. You remember last year's Tour, it was just throwing out all sorts of pronunciations for the young man's name. Secondly, and I don't want to gloat because I called this one a while back in our season predictions, David Godeau is far eclipsing Thibaut Pinot as a Frances Desjeux team leader. I expect to see this trend continuing into the Grand Tours. Thibaut Pinot, for me, is a man who's been on the fade for several years, and he's largely responsible for why FDJ haven't had a fucking result of note for the last 6 or 7 years, because they keep backing him and he keeps failing miserably. David Godot looks the real deal. We've seen his stage win in Paris-Nice, where Roglic and him rode to the finish, and make no mistake, it wasn't a gift from Roglic, it was a tactical decision to let him win, because he would have won anyway and Roglic would have lost the jersey if he had decided to sit on Roglic. So he again highlighted his form on a podium yesterday in Liège. I was a little bit disappointed to not see him attacking with, you know, 2 or 3k to go, because it was a fast group. We had Pogacar, Alaphilippe, Woods, Valverde, who can all sprint, and then Godot, who hasn't got much of a sprint on him. But you can't blame the kid for hedging and going for the podium, because if he attacks with 2k to go and he gets closed down, he's going to get fifth. This case, he sat in and he got a podium. So, look, you can't really question it, although we always love seeing those riders who just go for broke. Third lesson, I think we learned that Roglic needs a little bit of time off. He's been one of, if not the dominant rider for the first half of the season. Now the Tour de France is his next big priority. He looked ring rusty yesterday at 30k to go, when we seen Ineos hitting the front with, again, absolutely dismal, embarrassing display from Ineos in the one-day races. Apart from Dylan Van Baarle and Pidcock winning two semi-classics, for a team of their budget, they just get it wrong so many times. The whole team hit the front with Giro winner Theo Gegenhardt, Yates, ex-world champion Kwiatkowski, Carapaz. Like, think of the talent there. All Grand Tour winners, stage winners. They hit the front, they split the bunch, and this is like 30k to go, and then they don't stick a man into the top 10 even. There's a 5-man break goes with no representation from Ineos. It's just an embarrassment. But when Ineos did hit the front there with 30k to go, Roglic missed the split, and I think that's quite telling that his legs just aren't where they need to be. He needs that little bit of time off to get a little bit fresh. Don't forget, fitness and form are two different things. Fitness is this gradual build-up of training effect. But as we gradually build up training effect, fatigue comes along with it. So how we get form, how we get those magic days, is we build up this huge fitness and fatigue along with it. Then we take a little break, and that's how we bring form. And that's what Roglic will be looking for now into the Tour de France. If I was guessing, he'll probably take a little bit of time to just freshen up. Then he'll start a super hard training block, and then he'll start freshening up again. I'd anticipate he'll spend quite a bit of time at altitude between now and the Tour de France. Fourth lesson. The super tuck. It's just an absolute joke. We seen Carapaz yesterday, who's solo for Team Ineos, and they're in quite a good position at this stage in the race, maybe 20k to go. Carapaz is solo, and he's been disqualified for the super tuck. But disqualifying him from the super tuck, it doesn't do anything, because you can't take back how the tactics played out. Carapaz is solo, so now he's forced other teams to chase. Ineos get to sit on. Just going back and retrospectively disqualifying him does fucking nothing. So it's just another application of how pointless these UCI rules are. Carapaz is solo on his own in a super tuck, which we've never seen a crash from the super tuck, let alone a crash on your own in the super tuck position. But when you go and disqualify him, the impact that he's having on the race isn't just erased from history. That impact is still felt into the finish. That break went yesterday because of that. It's inseparable, one action from the other. So I just don't get it. It's like somebody that doesn't understand cycling or has no appreciation of how tactics play out is creating these rules and interpreting them. It's just beyond bizarre from the UCI. And number five, for anyone out there who is an aging listener, shall we say, Valverde just shows no signs of slowing down. He's 41 and he's a four-time Liège champion. He was sprinting literally for the keys of the palace. Eddy Merckx has won the race 5 times. Valverde would have been sharing the ceremonial symbolic keys to the palace with Eddy Merckx if he had won. At 41 years old, it's phenomenal, and it just goes to highlight something that we all love about cycling, that it doesn't really matter about your age. It's possible to hold your form and progress regardless of your age, and Valverde, at the very top of his game still at 41, is absolutely brilliant to see. And I know Valverde's had his history of doping, but anyone you talk to, he's just a class act and he's very much loved within the peloton. We had Willie Smith during the week, who was a previous guest on the podcast, talking about the lack of respect within the bunch, and he even cited Valverde in that. He said it's not coming from riders of Valverde's class, this lack of respect. He's like, the guys who can actually throw down, the guys who have the palmares to brag about, aren't the ones who are bullying the lower grade teams. It's the sort of up and coming guys who have a bit of swagger about them. But it's just interesting that Valverde, at nearly every point a pro rider gets to, you know, criticize or give credit to a rider, Valverde always gets mentioned as such a class act, and he's one in true personal circles I've heard as well, is such a nice guy. So chapeau Valverde, 41 years old at a top five in Liège, Bastogne-Liège. Guys, I hope you enjoyed Liège at the weekend, and I hope you enjoyed the Roadman podcast, and guess what, this week I will be back tomorrow. Chat to you then. Hey everybody, it's Anthony again. Really quick, I want to invite you to join arguably the best thing I've ever put out inside the Roadman community. It's a challenge. It's a challenge called the 14-day Kickstart Challenge. So regardless of where your fitness is at right now, this is going to be the catalyst for making you faster and making you leaner. I've created this challenge to take the guesswork out of everything. It's 14 days of training plans, regardless of what your level is. There's masters, beginner, advanced. There's meal plans, shopping list, and even a video course holding your hand and talking you through it all. So what I recommend you do right now is just stop everything, press pause on this audio, and go to roadmancycling.com/14-day, or check out the link in the bio. That's roadmancycling.com/14-day.